Hi there, and welcome to the Engage Customer Podcast, where you'll discover the latest insights, opinions, and trends within the industry. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Salesforce, the world's number one service platform. With Salesforce, you have a 360-degree view of your customers, empowering agents and making interactions easy for your customers. The result? Deeper customer relationships built on intelligence, empathy, and trust. Visit sfdc.co/customer-service to find out more.
Today, our editorial director, Steve Hurst, is joined by Martin Hill Wilson. Martin is a leading customer engagement and digital business strategist, and an author and international keynote speaker. Working under his own brand, Brain Food Consulting, he designs masterclasses and transformational change, helping clients evolve their social and digital capabilities.
Welcome to this first in a series of Engage Business Media podcasts with our partner and friend, Martin Hill Wilson. Martin's an accomplished author, industry commentator, and frequent conference chair and keynote speaker. He's got deep experience in customer strategy from technology to culture, and currently Martin's leading the charge in Emotive CX, which focuses on the skills and management processes needed to deliver both the functional and emotive needs of customers, which I think we all agree is especially important in these times of heightened anxiety and uncertainty. Martin, welcome from me to the broadcast, which I think resonates strongly in these unprecedented times of pandemic and occasionally pandemonium. It's great to have you on board, Martin. And the title of today's first in this series with Martin is Preparing for a Recession, What Needs Rethinking in Your Customer Strategy. How are you today, Martin?
Very good indeed. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for asking. It's a little bit of a windy old grey day, but apart from that, I'm in a good space. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Here, the sun's just come out where I am, Martin, so hopefully the sun will be with you very soon.
Thank you.
And say welcome again. Welcome to our first in a series of podcasts, Martin. Now let's kick off, Martin, with this. Is it best to plan for a slower recovery? So the various economic indicators are suggesting that might be the case. What's your view on planning for a slower recovery, Martin?
Let's just track back a bit, a little bit. I think everyone was hoping for the V recovery speed. Certainly the government was promising that, you know, it gets bad and then it bounces straight back. I was looking in the TV last night and I think the Americans are still hoping to heck that that's going to be the case with 20%, you know, unemployment and all the rest of it. But in reality, if you look out and you take a more dispassionate view, I think that's unlikely. I think that, you know, there's a number of scenarios, bearing in mind that we still don't really have a sufficient cure yet for the corona issue. We're still experimenting, if you think about it, in terms of social distancing. We're still going back into the, you know, the work environment. We don't yet know what that's going to do, what's going to take place. And that we have got certain sectors out in the economy which have been absolutely, you know, knocked for six. And anything associated with travel, let's say, is going to take a long time. Just as a case in point, you know, the CEO of Rolls-Royce, which is part of that supply chain, you know, into airlines, into holidays, et cetera, et cetera. He's gotten rid of 5,000 people and said it's going to take us 5 years to get back to where we were today, pre-COVID. So, you know, certain sectors of the economy are going to limp along anyway. Some may never recover. Some are undoubtedly doing well. I talked to Scott Baker a couple of weeks back on one of the things I was doing, and he's with Misguided, which is the online you know, retailer.
Yes. Yeah.
for the 18 to 29 year olds, and they're 16% up, you know, and Mr. Bezos is shoved another couple of billion into his bank account as well. So
absolutely, there are winners and losers, aren't there, Martin?
I think it's likely to be an extended recessionary period, and probably even a bumpy one, going backwards and forwards with some of the things that could happen in terms of trying to kickstart that economy. Don't forget, by the way, we've still got 20% of the population here in the UK on furlough, and when the promise of the government paying that bill disappears, there's a stat that says right now only 20% of those companies, when they were polled, feel able to actually stump up those salaries. So we could see a whole glut of people coming onto the unemployment market at the same time as well.
So from furlough to redundancy, basically, yeah.
Yeah, you factor all that in, I think we're in for a slow recovery.
Yes, I do agree with you. It's interesting, actually, on the winners and losers side of things, because we're engaged. We actually did our own COVID-19 impact surveys in April, May of our communities and across our engaged customer, engaged employee and CX marketing communities. And across all those communities, it was more or less the same in terms of the winners and losers, 80% losers, 20% winners. So you're either losing badly or doing really, really well. There's quite a firm division there, isn't there? And so as you said, for many, there's no chance of a V-shaped recovery. So an L-shape would be the case for probably lots of people.
Well, we talk about the new normal. A friend of mine said recently, it's the new strange, which I think is actually probably a better way of describing it.
Very good. No, I agree with that. I agree with that, yeah. So getting on to our customers, no customers, no business, how do you think this will impact on customer behaviour, Martin? What's your view on that?
Well, I mean, you know, to put a bit of pseudo-psychology on, but really just common sense, we're living in times which are very uncertain. And if you look just back to maybe the last 5 years, because this is actually quite in keeping, you know, we do tend to have a recessionary impact every decade. You know, there's that definite cycle that goes on, and here it is. It's a much deeper, meaner one than before. But for those of us who will have lived through that, and for some of us, that was, you know, their main experience of how life should be. Things have just got more and more rosy in terms of the way that we've talked about consumers, their needs, the way that we have attempted to satisfy them, you know, the just-in-time, the real-time economy. Everything has been pretty much picture-perfect. And, you know, in many respects, going to work, which has been a duplicated experience across England, into newly constructed, reconverted, you know, waterfronts and fabulous buildings and WeWorks and all those kind of stuff, with all the associated shopping and lunch that goes with it. Basically, you know, we've had consumers who've never experienced anything, but it's been terrific. And I think that now we're looking at quite a different world. We're looking at a world where money and income and security is certainly a concern for the vast majority of people. And then that changes our priorities. And I think one of the reasons that we see so many of those signs on corporate websites saying that, you know, unless it's really vital, please don't try and get in touch with us. Which extends from the banks to the telcos and anybody with large customer bases, is simply because people are phoning in asking for payment holidays, people are phoning in concerned about their ability to repay, they're concerned about basically their future. And, you know, that quite rightly demands a human touch. So that's an indication, I think, of a changing set of priorities. And I do think there's probably, you know, if you think about Maslow's hierarchy, I think there's some truths that we can apply in that, which is that there is a hierarchy of need. And when you get busted back down to the simple things about security and shelter and ability to live, those become the predominant priorities for people. And then satisfying other needs has to drop away to some degree. And I was looking at some Australian research yesterday, which again sort of indicates that priorities are changing. They asked pretty much that question, and people are slightly less concerned with some of the frills and just more concerned with the basics. Now, some of the basics, by the way, are still that brands are very communicative and engaged with you know, customers and caring for their needs. But I think we're prepared to trade some of our expectations. I mean, just as a case in point, I tried to buy something for my son on Amazon probably 3 weeks ago now, and it was the first time I'd noticed that I was trying to buy a shirt, I think, and noticing that many of the options on colour and sizes just weren't in stock, you know. And I thought, gosh, maybe this is part of the new normal again, you know, that actually supply chain is not going to be as robust. And by the way, we're still in a pre-Brexit context as well, I have to say. So we really don't know that. So I think we're going to have to get used to not such a picture-perfect world. We are probably also going to, just in terms of simplicity of living. One interesting thing, which again we hear in some of the lifestyle comments, has been that having been forced to stay at home, many of us have reconnected with what being a family means. You know, many of us pulled out card games and things like that that we haven't done for years and years, and probably discovered that, you know, some of that lifestyle about always going out, always dining, always looking for experience as an event, you know, that kind of approach to life. We're looking for maybe a slightly more simple lifestyle and settling in for that, you know, with the habit that COVID has started to instill as far as that's concerned. So I think we've got different purchasing priorities. But on the other hand, with an uncertain future, I think that we also are living in more personally anxious times. And so therefore we are looking to organizations that display a humanity. Now, I think that's either in terms of, let's just take the current situation that's happening in America, which again has resonated very strongly with black communities, you know, across the planet. And it is interesting to the way in which people are being very quickly called to account if they're appearing insensitive towards that. And that extends to NFL players, to, you know, people in government, to even, you know, organizations and to brands. And again, an interesting piece I read yesterday from Unilever was talking about the vital role that organizations play to their customers in terms of being seen to be a trusted source of information and commentary on the way that the world is right now, and not to put a, you know, your foot into it and to be appear crass and insensitive. And indeed, I think Nike were very quickly out on the George Floyd commentary, you know, and indeed, you know, commented on that situation, allowed their own employees time off to observe that event as they chose to, and all those kinds of bits and pieces. So again, it's because I think we're in a heightened emotive state that we look out to brands in terms of how they respond, and it matters to us the way that they are seen,
yes,
you know, to respond. And there's definitely going to be dividends or negative consequences for brands that have been slow to understand that.
Yes, I was going to ask about that, how brands are responding, and I think it's fair to say that, you know, we're all customers and we've all got good memories, haven't we? And we're going to remember which organisations, which brands did what at which stage, during this period of time.
Yeah. So value-based, you know, values that you've got, how you're seen to behave to employees, how you're seen to behave to customers, you know, that you can't cheat on that, as we all well know. So the authenticity of the leadership and you know, standing up in terms of that, I think absolutely matters. And brands that can afford to do the right thing for their customers will, I think, find themselves, as has been proved in previous recessions, by the way, you know, you can make one stupid comment and then suddenly you lose a whole tranche of customers. And you know, equally, if you've done the right thing, you'll find that they will stick with you in times when they get better.
Is the psychology behind that because the stakes are higher? Do people have, you know...
Yeah, I think they're more sensitive. Yeah. They're more sensitized. You know, we're in a heightened state of sensitivity, and therefore we feel vulnerable, and therefore the body blow of an insensitive comment is probably louder, you know, and again, memory is massively important. And, you know, with you know, the brain does tend to pick up the negative more than the positive in the sense of a threat. And often the things that we encode to memory, because it's a survival instinct, are to remember the things that looked ominous and dangerous. Now, that's just purely physical. That can be cognitive and that can be psychological and emotive. And so brands, you know, can bank either good or poor memories of their behavior very, very easily. And in these heightened times, probably more so than in usual times, where we just discount that comment and say, ah, well. But in these days... And the interesting thing is you can't run everything through PR either. You know, you can't have that kind of slow response. You've got to be. And actually, the Unilever commentary was dead interesting because they said, you know, we are literally seeing the world being changed as we speak in minute by minute. And if we are going to be observers and commentators on that, our responsiveness and the way that we do that in an appropriate way without falling over actually poses huge challenges to us to do the right thing, but, you know, also do it authentically and up to speed. So brands that really aren't geared towards that, I think, will find that really quite tough.
Yes, and long-standing brand and individual reputations can be damaged very quickly, can't they?
Indeed.
If the wrong things are done. Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of how organisations are responding, how do you see things in terms of the acceleration of digital investment within brands? Because
well,
we are living in an increasing digital world, aren't we?
We are. I mean, so if we go back to the comment you made, you know, the 20% that are doing well may well take the view that it's time to really go for market share because, you know, based on strengths and weaknesses, and it's a well-known strategic battle plan cry, isn't it, that double down and try to take more market share because unprecedented times. So from that point of view, you may well see that part of the market actually investing, spending more and accelerating their approach and to consolidate for when things get better. But many people will be looking at reduced budget. And
yes.
The poll that I ran, you know, at least 20-30% of CX and service leaders were now already, you know, in discussion with their CFOs, and it was about 20 to 30%. So the exam question becomes, how do you do CX at much, much lower cost, as far as that's concerned? So I think that organizations are instinctively considering the risk, looking out, and that was stressed in terms of non-discretionary spend is killed. Probably you will find that there will be a retrenchment on the decision making, and CFOs will hold the purse, you know, and will dole it out on a needs basis rather than allocate that down, so that people can go, well, I have X amount this year, I must spend it, or it will be taken back. I think there'll be much more centralization of budgets. And
I think that's happening already, Martin.
That's out there. And I see. And by the way, I don't really think that the full extent of the recession has dawned on people yet. And I don't think the Brexit impact, of course, has dawned on us. So there's a reasonable assumption there saying that the initial set of cost cutting may well become much more severe in the next round, you know. And some people who have been through recessions say it's best to cut deep and hard to begin with. So you may see some quite severe things. So that's one side of the conversation, more for less. The next side, and the interesting point about that is that clearly, oftentimes headcount is part of the equation of cost. So what are we going to see going on there? How many furloughed people will come back? If you look at it in a service or just as a customer engagement context, are we going to really double down on as much automation and as much self-service as we can do? And I think that that agenda was underway to begin with pre-COVID. I think that that has received and will continue to receive a massive acceleration. And the reason I'm doing the Emotive CX is because that was in play anyway. And I do believe that we should only really use live resource and human assistance for, you know, the emotive, the complex and the relationship build. So I see the genesis of a smaller but much more highly qualified workforce in terms of that skill. And I would make that point across marketing, sales and service. And I see that that's definitely in play. I think that organizations that believe you can automate and use AI for everything will really miss the boat because of the emotive component that we all have as humans at the moment.
Absolutely.
And, and whilst we will need to restrict access to human, we absolutely need to know when we need to make it ourselves available to people, or we will pay that price. So I see all of that going down. And then I'm sure you've heard this in other cases, but there seems to be a fairly broad acknowledgement, which I think is one of the silver linings to this process, which is that when needs must, funnily enough, people get on with stuff. So a lot of the considerations that, well, if we just consider the work that we've done together over the last 5 years, I've always been struck by the, you know, the number, the difference between those case histories that you have managed to find and put on an audience, to, you know, on the stadium to talk to other people about what they've done, versus the vast majority of the audience that go, I'd love to, but we'll never get around to it. And, you know, the speed of transformation has been relatively slow. I think that, you know, isn't it amazing that suddenly homeworking, not popular in the UK, can somehow be delivered in 72 hours when it becomes imperative?
Yes, it's a sort of case of necessity being the mother of invention, I think, in that case, Martin.
There you go.
And
what that, and behind of that is an interesting dynamic, which is, I think, a lot of the reasonableness, the reasons why you can't, whether it's legal, whether it's financial, whether it's prior, whatever, has gotten blown away. And into that gap has poured everybody of the digital tribe who have been wanting to get on with workflow, transformation, rewriting, you know, journeys and all the rest of it. And I think there has been an absolute acceleration. And so far, it appears that the people who have typically been the blockers have chosen either not to go back and say that's a silly idea, or are just waiting to see, you know, what we're going to get out of it. Now, one of the things I think that goes with that is that we're definitely an agile, not waterfall world, as far as, you know, the size of the project and the speed at which we're trying to deliver ROI. And that needs to be matched to what also is taking place in markets in terms of the customer and their changing priorities and just the dynamics of who's involved in a particular market. I mean, there are definitely losers. Who's going to fill up that vacuum? Well, the answer is it could be us. So let's get on with that quickly. So I think businesses have to be, you know, very nimble at this particular point in time.
Yeah, there are great opportunities, aren't there?
Not huge, and therefore they need to have their people. Yeah. really in an inventive outcome-based mindset, and just continue that. So actually everything has speeded up incredibly fast.
Yeah, so as Darwin said, it's those who are best able to adapt who are going to survive and thrive. Just thanks for that, Martin. What are the immediate priorities do you think that influence customer and employee loyalty at this time?
Well, I think that you definitely need, as an organisation, to show, you know, to wear your heart on your sleeve. You need to be empathetic. You need to understand why customers are upset. I think that we need to be orientating ourselves to listening as opposed to simply passively hearing, if you want to use that as a summary of the whole approach. There's been a lot, as we know, again, from listening to some of the comments when we were running the conference, that we do listening, we do hearing in terms of VOC, but we do very little action sometimes. And the gap between those two points has absolutely got to be collapsed, and we've got to almost be instantly responsive with limited resource, it has to be said, to go and connect to customers when it matters and how it matters. And that is huge. And I think quite a lot of the, let's call it the brand promise, needs to possibly get reorientated to just making practical demonstrations of our availability as a brand to customers in their time of need. And I think that's a hugely important thing to, you know, to get across at the end of the day. The second thing, by the way, is that there's probably a huge amount of reinvention going on in terms of what we provide customers. You know, everything from the strategic value proposition just down to how we want to engage with you, you know, in terms of marketing, how we want to engage with you in terms of service. And I think that we are in a period of transition and we don't know what that looks like, and it's in the process of continuous evolvement. So interestingly, how do we keep up to date with that? And I think one of the things that I have noticed online is the sheer volume of webinars, Zoom events and everything, because I think they've become a new listening post. I think everybody is trying to figure out what is going down at the moment and staying as close as we can, you know, to events as they unfold. So I think that staying very close to customers and demonstrating that you're listening as opposed to not really attending to their needs is huge on that particular side. And the same applies really to, you know, employee. You know, a lot of people are at home. It has suited us at lifestyle level for a lot of people, and I don't think that when we finally get back to brick and mortar, it's necessarily going to be absolutely brick and mortar. I think that we're going to see a ping-ponging between the two, and that's going to become the new normal as far as that is concerned. But it does then raise the issue of how do we deal with those motivational aspects. I know, for example, talking to some friends in Centrica, that in the transformation they're currently doing, interestingly, it has proved to be quite relatively easy to work remotely in terms of the activity of the action plans, the execution, but the innovation brainstorming is much more klutzy when you're not physically in a room together. And so I think that remains an outstanding issue. How do we, you know, try to use, if we are going to come back together into bricks and mortar environments, those, you know, what are they best suited for innovation, possibly for team building, possibly for certain other things? And then when we're remote, how do we go back through the things that matter to us in terms of team spirit, sense of connection, and all those other bits and pieces? And again, it probably applies as much to employees as customers, listening, you know, staying close, positively, proactively communicating, and all of that. And then just the last point I would make is I still think that it's been such a shock to the organizational system and individual system that very few organizations, I'm sure, feel that they're up to full operational effectiveness. And so we're running on a depleted tank as far as that's concerned. And I still think that many of the legacy systems and infrastructure are impeding people working remotely. I think it's much more difficult to, you know, to collaboratively work together, although we're spending a huge amount of time online. Everyone's zoomed out. You know, it's a new middle management disease, you know, have too much Zoom every day. You know, so and it's just difficult to know how we kind of replicate the serendipity of what people refer to as the water cooler effect. And that still remains a thing that I think we're trying to crack. But on the other hand, I heard a fascinating comment, I think, from one of the insurance businesses when I was listening into a contact center online event. And they said that it was an employee survey, and the effectiveness and empowerment and autonomy have both rocketed as attributes. And they were debating that and saying it's probably because there was less interference from team leaders and supervisors, and actually it suited people's lifestyle to work in a much more independent sort of a way. So there's pluses and minuses there, but overall, being effective in a remote context, I still think is a lesson to be learned.
Agreed, Martin. Agreed. And very good points made there. One final question for you, Martin. What should leaders start to think about then strategically as we move forward?
Well, depending on where you are sitting in the organisation, there is a bit of competition here. You know, if I'm a marketing leader, a sales leader, a CX leader, a service leader, you know, that we're all going to be pitching for what we want to be doing, and the fact that we probably deserve an unfair share of the budget, which is now much diminished. And so I think it's incumbent upon all those leaders to display and argue and demonstrate their value. And I think that the value particularly has got to be as tightly defined as you can. It's not all about numbers, but it certainly begins with numbers. And there has to be a literacy. We know that there was a debate anyway about CX's commercial value. Although a lot of us, you know, belong to the church, it doesn't necessarily mean that those outside the congregation are totally sold. And I think there's an imperative to demonstrate ROI effectively in your area. I think the second thing is, which is massively important, if you look to the digital transformation, which everybody is doing, the track record in reality of digital transformation events, which have got a heavy components of technology in them, is not good. It still remains at that 70% failure rate. And I think that that's hugely important, because with less money, you can't afford to screw it up. And how are we going to get more effective in trying to bring about these changes? Because there's just not so much budget to be done. So part of your mission, I think, is to demonstrate maybe a change of your, approach to, in terms of maybe POCs, or just envisioning the future, or maybe spending more time recruiting the right talent into the team. I don't know what it's going to take, but you've got to be more effective there. And then generally, I think there's going to be a huge debate going on about the relative rebalancing between when can we automate and when do we still need the human touch. And as such, that, you know, the reinvention of the way that organizations are constructed. I think that there also will be a bigger issue going down in terms of the way that they're managed from leadership downwards. I think that there will inevitably be less command and control. And we have already demonstrated that people from home can be trusted to work, which, of course, was one of the assumptions of command control and why people were quite reluctant for that. And I think that that will be an unstoppable force now, you know, combined with the cross-functional teamwork that we've seen coming on the last couple of years. I think there's a quite different new organizational development taking place. And actually, I'm rather convinced that if AI takes off, one of the outputs of AI surely has got to be real-time information on an area such as supply chain, such as customer, such as whatever. But with that information, it obliterates the need of one of the leadership roles, which is to tell people what to do next. And if we're living in a real-time world with that information being available, then actually people are much more organic in terms of their own decision-making and intuitive. So I think part of the future world also will be to notice the bigger picture of how we're beginning to change the way that we work and that we organize ourselves, both within teams but also across the organization. But within that, there will be a shrinkage most probably of headcount. Unfortunately, there will be an acceleration of automation, which has to be proved to be effective in terms of, you know, promising the outcomes that the original business case did. And I think humans, again, will therefore find themselves in a constant upward spiral of redefining competencies and skill sets to keep up to speed.
So just summing up, Martin, would you say that COVID has been a catalyst for change? Or is that an understatement?
Oh, no, that's an understatement. And I think that It has brought a great deal of pain and misery to anybody who's directly been affected and families, and that's absolutely unwelcome. The damage that it has done, you know, economically, again, is quite staggering, but it has also produced a kind of sense of necessity amongst people.
Yes.
And that is no bad thing. I think that the UK, for whatever reasons, found itself very, very entrenched and comfortable in a certain habit. And I think that has been blown away. And that I see as the silver lining. And I think, you know, many people have said, well, for example, I can give you one which I think summarizes it perfectly. A very well-known investor got involved with one of the gig economy outsourcers and said he has now invested heavily in because he sees a change in that market that has taken place in 5 weeks, which would normally have taken 5 years. And I think that that's the kind of accelerated change and transformation that we've seen. And with that initial catalyst, I think there's a lot of momentum that's been created, and I don't see that slowing down. So yes, in answer, COVID has been a catalyst, and the upside silver lining is I think it's gotten our digital transformation, you know, 21st century organizational design agenda absolutely back on track and accelerating at speed.
Yes. Good place to draw a line, I think, Martin. Thank you for that. And I'm looking forward to our next podcast, Martin. I think next time we're going to be looking at looking into how customer needs are changing. Can you give us just a few words on that? Yeah.
Yes. Well, we've mentioned it a few times today, but one of the really interesting points is that if you have got less money in the pot and you're intending to do stuff, it clearly has to be relevant. And normally a point of reference for that are customers. Key question for us is, are we assuming that those customer needs are identical? I think that's a poor assumption. So I think one of the first places to start is to go out and re-listen again to customers and work out what's changed. And I want to explore that with people on the next podcast.
Well, we can go into that in much more detail, Martin. And thanks, Martin, for today. Keep safe and stay well. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you very much, Steve. Same to you.